Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Finding Deborah was my husband's number one priority before he passed away. So I always will always fight for justice for Deborah. I just don't want people to forget about her. That's why we like to have, you know, vigils and we hold posters up of her because we don't want people to forget that, you know, she's still missing. I would like my mother-in-law, she's getting older now, and, you know, and I wish that we could give her closure, you know, because I think Deborah deserves that.
She would never have left her kids. She just wouldn't have. And I think if she was ever planning on that, I firmly believe she would have told me. I do. Because she knows I would have taken anything she told me, and it would have, and I would have kept it. I would have never let Louie know where she was, but she didn't tell me, and she didn't take a purse, and she didn't take her money, and she didn't take her credit cards, and she didn't take anything of hers. So how far could she have gone?
On June 20th, 2000, 30-year-old Deborah Mello left her doctor's office and got into the family car with her husband, Louie. As they drove along Route 18 in Weymouth, Massachusetts, Louie says that they got into an argument and Deborah asked to be let out of the vehicle. Louie claims that she got out of the car without her purse and the items she had purchased from the doctor's office. Deborah has never been seen or heard from again. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 184 of The Vanished, Deborah Mello's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Before we get into the details of Deborah's disappearance, I wanted to explore who Deborah was as a person. For this story, we spoke with Deborah's sister, Patty, who was only 18 months younger and especially close with Deborah growing up. She shared the difficult childhood that she and Deborah had and how this strengthened their sisterly bond.
Well, our childhood was, you know, not like your norm. My mother, you know, had a drinking problem. So, you know, we basically were put with my grandmother. So we had a great childhood with her. She helped raise us. And so we were kind of back and forth. We would go back to my mom. We also have two brothers that they were older than us. So they basically, I believe, were in like foster homes. And then my sister and I were at my grandmother's. So I spent, you know, most of my childhood closest to my sister. And we did everything together. As a kid, we hung around with basically the same friends. We did all our childhood things and hung out, and we had a lot of fun. As we got older, she went her little way in middle school and, you know, hung with her friends, and then I with mine. But we did still remain having some of the same friends. she's always been very funny. And when once we get laughing, we're kind of the sisters that once you start chatting, you know, she'll say something, I'll say something, and we start cracking up laughing, and then you can't stop, you know. You have a lot of fun like that. She could be very sassy, you know, if you said something and she didn't agree with it, she was going to let you know about it. She had just a contagious laugh. She was fun. She loved to go do things, dancing. She loved to dance. Loved kids. Very loving. Would do anything for you. If you were sick, she would be right there to do anything that needed to be done. Bring you soup, make you something, anything to make you feel better. Yeah, she just was a great, great sister. She was my best friend.
Patty and Deborah have two brothers who have since passed away, and an older sister, Carol, who was living in Hawaii at the time of Deborah's disappearance. Carol spoke with us and described what she remembers about Deborah from an older sister's perspective.
She was kind of a quiet girl. You know, she was very kept to herself, very domesticated, loved her family, just wanted a family, loved working on her home. She was a homebody. You know, she really loved being a mother and a wife. That was definitely her thing. She wasn't a career-oriented girl. Basically, that was her personality. That's what she wanted to do, was just have a family and a nice home, and she would decorate it. She'd spend a lot of time decorating her home and doing things in her home and her yard and spending time with her kids and stuff.
Deborah's close friend, Lori, also granted us an interview. We asked her to tell us how she met Deborah and what she remembers of her friend.
So I met her because I was engaged at the time to her brother-in-law. So her husband and my ex were brothers. And we were teenagers, so I met him very young. I was only 15 when I met Deb. And her and I just kind of hit it off right from the start. And that's how it all started. She was, you know, private as far as her personal life, but she was very thoughtful and giving. So if she knew somebody needed help, whether it was with money or somebody's kid needed clothes or food, she would step in and help out.
Deborah Mello had met her husband Louie when she was just a teenager and still in high school. Louie, several years her senior, openly shared with Deborah's sisters his pursuit of Deborah. Her sister Patty told us what she remembers of Louie chasing Deborah in what she thought was just young love.
Yeah, she was only 14. It was during high school. She ended up quitting high school. For some reason, in one of my classes, I believe it was English class, Louis, because of his broken English, was in my class with me. So Louis used to tell me all the time that he was going to marry my sister and that he was going to be with my sister. And I would be like, no way, you know, you're crazy. You're not, she isn't going to like you, because my sister was very popular in middle school and very pretty, and I just didn't think that she would go for Louis. Well, not only did she, it was a couple months later, he pulled in with his Camaro to have supper with us. We had tacos. I remember it like it was yesterday when he ever pulled in the yard, and here he comes, and I was like, oh my God, he really is taking my sister out. He really did. After all those times, I kept telling him, you're out of your mind, no way, my sister will never date you. And he ended up, so she was, God, I want to say, so she was about 14, 15, and I believe he's 4 or 5 years older than her. So it was kind of frowned upon, because he was a lot older than her. She was young, so my mother had to sign paperwork. My sister ran away with him. She ended up coming home, and she said, if I come home, I'm going to marry Louis. And my mother wanted her to stay, come home, because they went away together to Brockton or something. And so when she came home, my mother agreed to let them get married because she wanted to be married to him. He was her only love.
We asked Patty what she believes Deborah saw in Louis.
I want to say maybe, you know, the cool guy, like he just had the Camaro, he was older. My sister, you know, was a little more wilder than I was. She just wanted out. She was at that age where she was wanted to be, you know, go out and do things. And when we were living with my mother and stepfather, they were pretty strict. Like, who, when you're going to come home, who are you going to be out with? And I don't know. I think that maybe she thought he was cool. And he wined and dined her. And he worked at Dunkin' Donuts back then. He made very good money. He was a baker, you know, when my sister was younger. He made very good money. I think he bought her a lot of material things, which was very cool to her at that age.
Deborah and Louis ended up getting married when Deborah was just 16. And her mom was required to give consent for the young couple to marry. But Deborah knew she had found love. Here's Lori on her impression of their marriage and Louis's demeanor.
Even when she was married, she was underage and had to be like, had to get permission. He was always very possessive, I guess, of her. He really didn't care for any of her friends. He certainly did not like me.
Everyone that we spoke to for this story said the same thing about Deborah and Louis's relationship. At times, it was violent, and Deborah had expressed a desire to leave. Patty told us about an incident she had witnessed between the two.
Once they got married, I witnessed one incident when she was just pregnant with my niece. She moved in Taunton. They were getting, you know, decorating the apartment and everything. Something was said, and he got mad, and he picked up a curtain rod, and he lifted it to, like, go after her with it. That was the first and only time that I really saw him physical with her. But I do know from her telling me that he was physical. But that was the only time I witnessed it. And I ran across the street. I ended up calling my mother on a payphone across the street at like a Cumberland Farms, and my mother came right to the apartment and yelled at him, and she ended up coming home with my mother, and she was just shooken up and like horrified at that time when he picked up the rod. So that's from what I can remember. I know I was probably more horrified. So when it happened, I just got up instantly and knew that I needed to get help because I was afraid he was going to hit her. I mean, I know towards the end when we became old, when I was older and I had my kids and, you know, her kids were getting a little older, we were able to talk a little more about stuff like that. That's the only time I know that she wanted to get away from the marriage and stuff like that. But I did ask at one point, like, if he was hitting her and stuff. And she said, oh, no, he doesn't do that anymore. But then I just dropped it after that, how I would say he was. Very quiet, very withdrawn type of personality. Quiet, secretive. You never know what he's really thinking. He's the type of guy that just sits there and you just and listens to everything.
Deborah's friend Lori also shared a scary experience she witnessed in Deborah and Louis's home.
By the time I met Debbie, a lot of the physical stuff that I heard about, a lot of that stuff, I didn't see, because it was before I met her, a lot of it. He was more mentally abusive with her. He would do things like say he was going to kill himself, say things like, if I can't have you, nobody will. That kind of, like, manipulative. I'll give you an example. So he didn't like me because Debbie and I were very close. He bought her this big, gaudy diamond and ruby ring. I was over her house and he did not want me there. She had taken the ring off in the bathroom to wash her hands, left it on the sink. Louis took the ring and hid it, then turned around and asked her where it was. And she said it was in the bathroom. Well, of course it wasn't in the bathroom because he had already taken it. So then he turned around and accused me of stealing it. This is the games he used to play. And we had a big blowout. He threw me out and whatnot, accusing me of stealing her ring, which, God, I would never do. I don't remember if it was the following day or whatever. I went back over to Deb's. Louis was at work, and her and I tore the house apart looking for that ring. And we both kind of knew that he took that ring, but we were looking, did he hide it somewhere? We looked everywhere. We moved the furniture, cushions, you name it. We moved it. We looked everywhere. Never found the ring. That same day, he comes home and I'm still there. So big fight again. I leave. He starts looking around the house, puts his arm under the couch and pulls out the ring. Oh, here's the ring. Oh, she must have put it here. She liked jewelry, but Louis was always the type that he always had to have the biggest and the best and the most expensive. So a lot of the stuff that he would buy her would be so big and gaudy. And she's like, when am I going to wear this? I'm never going to wear this. That kind of a thing. But she, of course, she had it on her finger or whatever, took it off, like I said, at the sink. But no, it was not something that she was really interested in. She was very... She liked to look good. She liked to wear, you know, nice clothes, but very like casual, nice clothes. Not like, you know, I'm going to wear this beautiful gown and I'm going to go out shopping at the grocery store. It was more like, you know, a nice pair of jeans and a nice shirt. She was very casual, but she always looked very nice.
This wasn't the only time that Lori felt Deborah was being abused by Louis. She also shared some of the behaviors that she believed were controlling.
He was always looking for her. So if she would go out, say her and I, a lot of times we would go to Dunkin' Donuts and we would sit in the parking lot and just sit in the car drinking iced coffees and just chit-chatting. A lot of the times we would have our daughters with us and we would just, they would hang out. They were cousins, of course, and we would talk and just talk. We would see him drive by. And then a little while later, we'd see him drive by again. And we would make jokes about it because we knew like he was just making sure she was where she said she was going to be. Same thing if we would go out and it started to get late. All of a sudden, he would be looking for her. He would be knocking on people's doors that she knew and things like that, looking for her. But it was very strange to me that when she went missing, he wasn't out looking because he was always looking for her. So the weekend before she went missing, we had gone out and we were in separate vehicles, but we met at the same place. And she had a friend with her and I had friends and we were just all together at the same place. I left in my car to go home. She left with her friend in her car to go home. All of a sudden, I find out that he was out looking for her and he was knocking on the girl's door. And I'm not sure what the girl's name was, but he was knocking on her door. Wee hours of the morning looking for Deb and telling her that she better get home and that, you know, she had no business being there and that kind of stuff. And she had ended up going home. Then it was a few days. That was probably a Friday or Saturday night. So then it was just that few days later that all of a sudden they had an argument and she was missing. And then he went home, went to work the next morning, worked all day, went back home, and never looked for her? No.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Deborah's older sister, Carol, also shared her memories of Louie's violent tendencies towards Deborah, and how she had encouraged Deborah to leave Louie and bring the kids to Hawaii to escape him.
Of course, you know, I wasn't there every day. I live way out here. I wasn't around her every day like Patty was on a daily basis. But I would call Deborah up and talk with her. And she started having problems with Louie, and he was very possessive, very jealous. He didn't want her to spend time with anyone, even me. When I was on the phone with her, he'd be bothering her, asking her questions, trying to get her off the phone. How much longer are you going to be on the phone? Blah, 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 this and that. As years went on, she had problems with him. And she, at one point, she went away, but then she ended up going back with him. I don't know why. I guess maybe she felt like she was stuck or had nowhere to go. One day, I just started thinking, and I said, Deborah, why don't you just come out here? Because Hawaii is a long ways away, and he will not get off the plane. I told her that. I said, he won't get off the plane. I will make sure of it. So I said, listen, we'll do a sister's reunion and see if you can get Patty to go along with it. You guys come here with the kids, because I haven't seen the kids, and come here. And I told her this in privacy, but this was before cell phones or any of that. So it's the old fashioned line, landline, and he would pick up the line and I would tell Deborah, shh, like that. And she'd say, no, no one's listening. I'd be, yes, he is. I go, oh, I heard something, Deborah. What was that? You know, I would just say something like that. And she would know, and I would tell her when I had chances, when I didn't hear the line picking up. He was listening in. And I don't know if he knew exactly what we were going to do, but it was supposed to be her birthday in that October, because October is the best time to come to Hawaii because of the weather. And the flights here are way cheaper because kids go back to school already. And that was another thing. She was like, well, the kids, you know, what do I do? You know, if they're in school, and well, so what? They're going to Hawaii. They'll learn a lot of Hawaiian words. They'll take you all around. They can learn history. They can learn geography. Just bring them. This was probably right before she went missing, like in that same year, but it was January, February, March. You know, we had been talking about it. And then all of a sudden, June, she's gone. Just gone. And I was trying to talk her into it and tell her, listen, if you want, you can send clothing. You can send whatever you want. Mail me boxes when he's not looking. Things that you know are important, important papers, you know, clothes for the kids, things that he won't notice that they're missing, and leave what you really don't want. And then you can maybe proceed to get a divorce from, you know, from here or something. And I just figured it would be safer for her to come here. I don't think he would even think to come here, and he wouldn't even know where I lived. He never knew my address or anything. I don't even know if he knew that I lived on Maui at the time.
Deborah's family and friends don't have many fond memories of Louie, but it's clear that he had his own struggles he was dealing with. Before Deborah vanished, she found Louie in the family home attempting to harm himself, and she saved him before the situation escalated. After 14 years of marriage, Deborah was ready to leave Louie, but wasn't sure how. We also spoke to Steve, who was married to Deborah's sister Patty at the time of Deborah's disappearance. Steve recalled some of the times that Deborah made it clear that she wanted to leave.
In February, before this happened, she came to us and she's like, well, we're getting divorced. I'm like, what? She said, well, not right now. We're going on a cruise in February. And if it doesn't work after that and we still feel like we want a divorce, he's going to leave. I'm keeping the house and keeping the kids. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Like, there's no way he's going to do that. No way. And, you know, he's made comments, then if I can't have you, then no one will. You know, all these things. So he's not the sharpest, you know, nail, not the most intelligent person. The only thing that he knows is how to bake donuts and work for Dunkin' Donuts for that one owner. That owner has built him out of financial, bought him houses, cars. That was like the father role for both of those, you know, Deborah and Louie. For one other instance, Deborah went to the owner's daughter and said, I don't want to be married anymore. We're divorcing. I want you to relocate me to somewhere else. I don't want to work with him anymore. Then, like, a week later, this happens. You know, there's just so many little things that I know that just don't make it right.
Deborah's friend Lori also shared that she was hoping to leave the marriage.
He always used to tell her, if I can't have you, nobody will. Those were some of the words he would say to her. And she, I think, was ready to leave. Debbie had her own money. She had her own accounts, her own money. She contributed to the house, but she had all of her own money and just her name alone. And I think that she was preparing for a divorce. And I think he knew it, because if I know Debbie, she gave him a time frame to make changes in his life, maybe go to counseling, whatever. Maybe it was getting close to that time frame. I don't know. But I do know one thing. She would never leave her kids. And even if she was going to walk out and just leave like that, out of fear or whatever, why didn't she take any of her money?
We also spoke to Deborah's sister-in-law, Robin, who had known Deborah since they were teens. She also recalled a time when Deborah told Louie she wanted a divorce.
Debbie said to Louie that she wanted a divorce, right? And he was like, no, we can work it out, we'll work it out. And I don't know if she said, I'll give you a couple of months to get your stuff together or whatever. And then she went. He was so protective of her. That's the thing, though, you know, because, like, I heard that she couldn't even go to the bathroom without him making her leave the door open. He's so protective like that, but yet she goes missing and he doesn't even help look for her.
By all accounts, it seems like it was a rare occasion that Deborah was not with Louie. The two even worked together at a local Dunkin' Donuts. On June 20th, 2000, Louie took Deborah to her dermatologist appointment. When Louie arrived home in the family car without Deborah, their daughter asked where Mom was. Louie said that she had walked off and he was going to look for her. He brought home a pizza for the kids and then left for approximately 5 hours. He came home late that night and still no Deborah. Deborah's brother-in-law, Steve, has spearheaded the family's search for her. So when we spoke with him, we asked him to walk us through the events that took place after Deborah didn't come home.
I was actually at work on June 21st, and I went to work, came home. The boss's wife said to me, Stephen, she knows the family, something's up with Deborah. She's missing. She didn't come home last night. And they don't know where she is. So I left immediately, got on the phone, and found out what was happening. So I contacted the Weymouth police station, because the last place she went was in Weymouth, which was a doctor's appointment. A friend of mine actually worked there and saw her there. But she had purchased some stuff there and then got into the car. And that's the mystery. After that, that was around 3 o'clock, and the story goes she went into the car, and where that doctor's office was, if they started traveling south, they're going to end up going over an overpass of the train, of the T. And then he said they got into a fight about the products that she purchased, and she got out of the car and then left. He went over the overpass, turned around, came back, and she was gone. So then he claims, I looked for her up and down the street on Route 18 in Weymouth, couldn't find her. So he went home, he ordered pizza for the kids, and then he said, I'm leaving again to go look for her. So now we're at 7 o'clock in the evening, and his claim was he was going to go back to Weymouth and look for her, and that's what he had said, until we started hearing all these different things and we started investigating it ourselves, and somebody in the family actually saw him in Taunton. So the police questioned him and ran his cell phone, but now this is 18 years ago, so it took a week to get those records. It wasn't like it was today with working with, you know, state police and locals, FBI and all that stuff. You didn't have the cooperation that you do now. I've lived all that. So they confronted him, gave him a lie detector test, and said, where were you? He said, I went back and looked for her. He said, well, we have some records that show you were in Taunton. Oh, yeah. Yep, I was. I didn't go back to Weymouth. So he changed his alibi of where he was. So now we have him changing his alibi, saying that he was in Taunton, not Weymouth.
Steve told us about a strange incident that occurred shortly before Deborah's disappearance.
So Deborah and Patty were like 18 months apart, and I bought my wife at the time tickets to see Tina Turner. That's how long ago it was, you know? And I bought them 3 tickets, and I got a limo to take Deborah, Patty, and her mother all out to go Tina Turner to go to the concert. So I picked them up at our house, and we went. Well, they went. Just them. Not me. Just them. And he called. Are they home yet? Are they home yet? Dude, settle down. No. But that was the last time they were all together. Now, Deborah's disappearance was June 20th. We had plans to go out to eat on June 22nd, which is Patty's birthday. So we were always in contact. She was always over the house because we had 3 young kids. She was always helping us. You know, one of the kids, that's my, you know, that's the godmother. We knew everything about her. They were always had issues and always had problems. So that's why this was nothing new. As soon as we heard that something happened and she's missing, we already knew it was him. Because there's a history of he would tell her whatever she wanted to hear for that moment and then climb through a window, and now he's back into the house. And now she's afraid, and then she wouldn't pursue anything after that.
Steve and Deborah's sister Patty had been married, but have since divorced and remained amicable and worked together to raise their kids. While speaking with Patty, we asked her how she learned that Deborah was missing.
So I got a phone call at like 11 o'clock in the morning. I got a phone call from my niece, and she said, hi, Auntie, my mother didn't come home last night. Do you know where she is? And I said, what do you mean she didn't come home? Because that would be so odd. And why wouldn't Louis have called me? Because he would call, if she was gone at my house for a couple of hours, he would call and be like, Deborah there? So why would he never call me? So automatically I was like, what? So I said, what do you mean your mother didn't come home? And she said, no, she didn't come home last night. So I said, well, where's your father? And she said, well, he's at work. I said, so your mother didn't come home last night and your father's at work? And she said, yeah. I said, give me your father's phone number from work. I said, and if your mother has a phone book of all her friends, I want all those numbers and I'll call and see where she, you know, if she's at one of her friend's house. I thought maybe they got in an argument and she just left and went and slept somewhere. You know, I thought, well, let me just ask. There is 4 hours, I believe, that unaccounted for. And during those 3 to 4 hours, he claims he was out searching for her. The kids did say he came home from the doctor's office, bought them pizza, and then went back out looking for her.
Now, this is from way back that this was said. And I guess there is evidence that he did order pizza. He must have ordered the pizza. Now, where did he go after that? I don't know. That's where the mystery is. I had just recently spoke to her the night or so before. What I did was called Louie at work. And it was a little after 11:30-ish, maybe 11:45. And I said, hey, Louie, what's going on? What happened? So he was stuttering.
Well, you know, we got in an argument. She left the, he said, she went into the doctor's, got in the car and wanted some money to give to the doctors for some facial stuff. So I said, okay. And then he said, she asked me for the money. And I said, I don't have it. I don't have that kind of money. And then she started kicking and screaming and insisted on getting let out of the car. So we let her out of the car. And then he went down the end of the road, turned around, and came back, and she was gone.
Patty immediately knew something was wrong when Deborah's young daughter called looking for her mother.
I just instantly didn't feel good about it. That was just how I felt. After that, I got off the phone with him. I said, you need to go to the police. You need to report her missing because something's not right if she didn't come home and you don't know where she is. If she got out of the car, why aren't you looking for her? He says, well, I had to come to work. I've been looking for her. I said, well, then you need to go and get to the police station and report her missing. He says, I'm going. And then he never did. He did not go when I told him to go. Then I called a bunch of hospitals and to see if they found like a Jane Doe, if they found somebody. I thought maybe something happened. Maybe she was found somewhere and they didn't, got knocked out. I didn't know what to think. So I called every hospital in the area. I called everywhere. Nothing. No one heard of anything. No woman came in.
After Patty couldn't find any trace of Deborah in the hospitals or morgues, she decided it was time to file a police report if Louie hadn't already.
One of her best friends, she ended up coming over. My ex-sister-in-law came over. She started making phone calls. And one of her real good friends said, I'm going to the police station. Because this is like later on in the day. I called the police station and I said, has Louie Mello come in and reported his wife missing? And he said, ma'am, if somebody is missing and you're looking for somebody to come and call them in missing, he said, then nothing has happened. No one has called in a missing person. It's called Debbie Mello. I said, okay. So I hung up. Her friend was like, I'm going down the police station. So when she went there, not even 20 minutes later, Louie showed up. Meanwhile, my kids were very young at that time. So I had three kids, small kids, trying to take care of them, trying to make 1,000 phone calls. And it was a very stressful day. You know, all I know is that her friend basically was, you know, told the police she felt like maybe Louie did something. I believe from what she said that they did go and check his car out. And then they had him there for a long time.
The local police kept Louie for questioning that day, and Patty became increasingly worried about the children. Despite the chaos of the day, Patty's concern for the safety of Deborah and her kids was paramount. She didn't realize that this was the last time she would see Deborah's children for nearly a decade.
They just kept him there, and that's when I ended up going and picking up the kids, and I brought them back to my house. And I called my mom, and I basically was like, okay, they have Louie there. I have the kids. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going on. My mother came and took the kids to her house because she didn't really want him to have them back because we didn't know what was going on. We were all very nervous. Of course, we thought it was Louie, so we weren't sure. The police ended up going to my mother's, getting the kids back, and Louie ended up going home with them. And then from there, we weren't able to see the kids for like 8 or 9 years. But he would not let us see the kids. He kind of, you know, made us out like the bad guy, made us like we were the bad people because we accused him.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. While Deborah's family and local community came together to look for her, one person didn't ever express any interest in looking for Deborah. Deborah's brother-in-law, Steve, told us about the first days after her disappearance.
I end up going to Weymouth, talking to Detective Gervasi. We file a complaint. I went back to Taunton. I filed a complaint with, well, a report with Taunton, with Weymouth. Now that's Plymouth County State Police, talking to them. For the next week, it was posters and searches. Weymouth Police and State Police did a over-the-air base. They did a bunch of searches up and down, along with a lot of civilians, you know, looking everywhere. There was talk of he worked on Ivory Street, and he baked donuts at the Dunkin' Donuts with Deborah. Deborah worked the front. He worked the back. It was the dean. And across the street was the landfill, which is where the incinerators were. But the next day, Trooper Diane Lilly from the state police went over there, seized everything, stopped everything, checked everything out, looked at everything, and nothing was found, nothing was brought up or anything. Every day, he wouldn't be involved in anything. He wouldn't talk to us. He'd ask him, and he had no comments. His family was involved, but we're trying to get help. And the funny thing was, the place where they worked, and they were working for Dunkin' Donuts, for the same guy, and not one flyer stayed up in his store. Not one flyer was posted in his store. So it was kind of weird. You know, if I had to say, what do I think? If he had help, it just doesn't look good for the owner of the store. After that, we've had, you know, searches at his house, another lie detector test. They searched his house, the car, the outside, came up with nothing.
Deborah's sister-in-law, Robin, shared her thoughts on Louis's behavior in the aftermath of Deborah's disappearance.
Louis says, because I know supposedly she went to a doctor's appointment. He said that they got into an argument over probably, I think it was over money, over the amount of what it was going to cost for Deborah to go to a dermatologist. They got into an argument, and she got out of the car. Supposedly, she walked away. He drove away, he said. And then he turned around and supposedly went back, and she was gone. You know, if supposedly, you know, he was married for 14 years. You know, he loved his wife. The way he portrayed himself, you know, he makes us think what we're thinking about him because he's not proving himself. If I'm, you know, not being accused, but pretty much being accused of something, you would want to kind of like fight for yourself and say you didn't do something.
Steve told us more about the search for Deborah.
Louis's family, you know, started acting up and giving me a little grief with putting up the posters and what I believe. And so that sometimes those issues became public because they would be taking down the posters and then it would be in the news. And I kept it strong where I did advertising on poster boards on the back of the Gatra community buses, ads, whether it was the anniversary date, the birthday, like all these things. Then obviously after a year or year and a, you know, half or so, it just started getting quiet. So I've had prayer vigils, searches. I mean, I've searched high and low with the public, with law enforcement, and he did not attend, not one, not one. And any time that, you know, anybody would ask him anything, it's no comment, no comment. He went out and put cameras up on his house, bought a bulletproof vest. We've exchanged some words together, and then his new girlfriend filed charges against me, and she said that I hit her, and she worked at a Dunkin' Donuts too. And just by chance, the camera system didn't catch me on the other side of the countertop where, as the customers stand ordering my coffee, and I, you know, spoke up and I said, hey, this is between me and your boyfriend. Keep your nose out of my business. And then I left. Next thing you know, the police were waiting for me when I came home. She said she went to the hospital. I hit her, everything else, but nothing panned out and everything was, you know, dropped because it was ridiculous.
Not only did Louis choose not to participate in the search, but as Steve mentioned earlier, many of the flyers that were posted around Louis's neighborhood and place of employment were taken down. Here's Patty with more.
You know, he didn't really give us any reason not to think it was him. He never tried to look for her. He took down signs when we posted them. I went to the Dunkin' Donuts with missing signs. After we made missing signs, I went to the Dunkin' Donuts. When I went there and I went to hang them up at her Dunkin' Donuts, he wasn't there. But when I hung them, I went up to the register and I said, can I hang these of Debbie? She's missing. And one of the girls goes, no, she's not missing. She's on vacation for 2 weeks. I said, no, she isn't. She's missing. She's like, no, Louis said she's on vacation for 2 weeks. I was like, yeah, well, he's lying. And I hung them everywhere at Dunkin' Donuts. So right there, it was kind of like, what? It just didn't seem right. And then he never participated in anything, unfortunately.
Deborah's sister-in-law, Robin, also shared some of Louis's strange behaviors after Deborah disappeared.
I remember one time when the Fox 25 News was at his workplace. And I'll never forget this. They got him on tape talking on the back of the workplace. The news guy was like, had the camera on him and he's putting like trash in the dumpster and he's, and the guys, you know, just wanted to get a statement from him because nobody could talk to him. Louis's like, you better get out of here. You're going to find out what happened to you, what's going to happen to you too. But nobody really realized that when they were talking about that on the news. But I remember that clear as day. And I'm saying to myself, did they just hear that statement he just said? He's never even helped us search for her, not even for a moment.
We asked Patty what Louis believes happened to Deborah and what he has told law enforcement and others when asked about the day Deborah vanished.
Oh, he thinks she ran off. That's what he tells people. He didn't tell me that. He told me that story about she got in the car, you know, insisted on getting let out, and he went back and she was gone. Now, I know he told other people that she took off.
If Deborah asked Louis to let her out of the car, as he maintains, why did she leave her purse and shopping bag in the car? Lori told us why she feels like something happened in the car that day.
Everybody that I have ever come across that hears about this case and knows this case, they all say that he did it. There's no way he didn't do it. There's no way he didn't do it. He had to have done it. Maybe it was an accident. I don't know. Maybe he got ticked off at her in the car and walloped her or something. I don't know. I don't know. I wish I knew. I'd give anything to know. So it's hard to say, because is his story even remotely true? Was it an argument in the car? It would not surprise me for Debbie to say, let me out of the car. That would not surprise me from her. But if she was going to get out of the car, she would have taken her purse and she would have taken off. So I don't feel that that's what happened. I think whatever happened, happened inside that car first. That's what I think, because the car was searched, but everything, you know, her fingerprints, her hair and everything should have been in the car. It was her car. So, and then by the time he reported her missing, it was over 24 hours later. He could have drove to, you know, to Maine and back in 10 hours. So, I mean, she could be anywhere.
While speaking with Steve, we asked him what he thinks happened to Deborah on that day in June, 19 years ago.
This happened on the 20th. He didn't report her missing until the 21st. That's when I found out also, which was the following day. Conveniently, after, you know, the rubbish and the trash was removed from the store, that's always a possibility that I've thought about. He waited that time for a reason. At the time, there was an old airbase that was across the street from where the doctor's was. There was Green Tree Lane Road that was across the street that had some apartment buildings. But there was an old, like I said, that old airbase that was there. It was just deserted and it was just vacant. So everybody thought, oh, you check that, you check that. But we had dogs. We had helicopters going over. I mean, they actually put in a lot of effort in searching, but just nothing. I mean, we did a Fox 25 story, you know, a short time later, and you stand out on Route 18 at 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the afternoon on a weekday. You're going to be noticed by hundreds of people because it's such a busy road and no one saw her throughout the years. He's never had any involvement. Whenever we approached that Dunkin' Donuts or the owner, all the employees, she's not missing. She doesn't feel good. She's home. That's what they were told. All the employees told me personally, she's home. She's sick.
Patty also shared some of the scenarios that she has considered over the nearly two decades that Deborah has been missing.
I've imagined a million things. The only thing I can think, you know, I also knew Louie for all these years. I mean, I was constantly over their house. Louie was a big part of my life. For me to visualize something of this sort, of him doing something, really makes my mind crazy. But again, I know that she wanted to leave, and I know their deadline was in June. They went on a cruise, and if things didn't work out, supposedly she was going to be able to leave in June. She was going to leave. So did things not be working out? And then all of a sudden, you know, they have this discussion, and she decides and says, I'm leaving you. And maybe out of a fit of fear and rage that she's leaving, maybe he either grabbed her and it was an accident. And it was kind of like one of those, if I can't have you, no one will. That type of thing, that's how I see it could have happened. That's the only thing I can think of. I feel like it was accidental that he didn't. I kind of don't think he planned it. I just don't see that him, that kind of person, like planning this big thing. There's been a lot of rumors that he put her in the dumpster at Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, there's rumors that he knew somebody and put her in the dump where they could burn incinerator. There's just been a lot of things that have been said via psychics, people, opinions and stuff. And all of it is very nauseating to me. But is he capable of doing that? I don't know. I guess there's a lot of people in this world that you don't think are capable of doing something and they do it. So
We also asked Deborah's friend Lori to share her opinion of what happened to Deborah and if she believes that Deborah will ever be found.
I hate to say it, but I feel like she's never going to be recovered. And obviously, I would want nothing more than that. Hell, I would love to get a phone call one day and have her be alive and say she did take off and she was just scared. It'd be great. But I know that's not the case because she just wouldn't, she would never have left her kids. She was a good mother. She tried her best. It was always me and Deb. Her and I would take the kids everywhere. We would do everything together with those kids, including vacations. We went to Six Flags, New Jersey for a few days with all the kids. And she took all the kids to Florida, to Disney. I didn't go to that. I wasn't able to go to that. But she took my daughter, Caitlin, and her two kids and just her and all the kids and went to Disney for like 5 days. He was never with her. It was always her that did it. I don't think he's going to talk. I think he's going to take it right to his grave because that's the kind of person he is. He's just a rotten, selfish. I don't feel that there's any way in hell he is going to come clean. I think the only person he would ever confide in is his brother, and he's not going to talk if that happened. No way.
It was mentioned earlier that Louie did not allow their kids to see Deborah's family for many years. Deborah's friend Lori shared her serendipitous encounter that allowed her to reconnect with the kids.
They're great. I mean, we used to see them all the time when they were little. They grew up with my daughter, and Alyssa and my daughter Caitlin were very close growing up. And, you know, when that happened, I went a long time without seeing them because when they were little, little Louie never let them see anybody, especially me. So I went years without seeing them at all until they were older and driving around and had their own lives. And then I ran into them in the Silver City Galleria Mall here in Taunton. And it was the first time I saw Alyssa and Louie in years. And I just broke down and cried because I couldn't believe that they were standing in front of me. I just kind of walked right into them. I wasn't looked up and she was standing right in front of me. And she looked just like her mother. And it just, I could not hold back the tears. It was unbelievable. And ever since then, you know, for a little while, she would come by here when her daughter was younger every now and then, and we're friends on Facebook and that kind of thing, but I don't see her very often, and she does not like to talk about it.
Law enforcement declined to speak with us for this story, but Steve shared that he believes the case is actively being worked to this day.
It's still an open case. It's not a cold case. Things happen periodically, and they look into it, but the problem is, so Detective Gervasi, he was, you know, a middle-aged guy 18 years ago. The state police, they don't usually stay on CPAC or, you know, they don't stay as a patrolman or something, you know, for very long. If they move up, they move out, they retire, things happen. So now I'm dealing with law enforcement today that are new to the case. I'm dealing with these law enforcement people. I'm 47 years old, and some of these young troopers that are out there are in their 30s, and I got to teach them who they were because 18 years ago, they just got their license.
While Deborah's sister Patty hopes that Deborah is found and this mystery is resolved, she spoke about how she feels about getting closure all these years later.
I really don't believe in closure. I just would like to be able to know that we know what happened, because it's always that wonder. That wonder, constant wonder, like when you're driving, like, is she here? Is she there? Am I driving by the area she could be? Just all those feelings are just constant when you're out. And it's not a day goes by. I don't think of her. Every single day, most of the time, several times, I'm always thinking of my sister. Especially, you know, sunflowers. My sister loves sunflowers, and friends of ours gave us sunflower seeds. And we're going to throw them as, like, when you go in places, and hopefully sunflowers will just grow. And at least it's a positive. Like, if we go by that area again and we see sunflowers, it's like, okay, that's a great symbol of Deborah and her light, her funniness, and her great smile. And it's like, that was something she really loved. So I try to think of things positive, but boy, it's difficult when you're driving and you wonder if she's there and you just want to know what happened. We've kind of come to the conclusion where she's not coming home. So that we've come to that conclusion where we know she didn't run off. I think we feel better knowing exactly, try to find out what happened. So all you're wondering, but the closure, nah, she's still gone. There's no closure. We don't have her. She's not here with us. It's never going to be a closure for me anyways. Did I think that it was going to be 19 years that we weren't going to find her? It's just amazing to me that we've gone all these years with nothing. So do I think he'll ever be prosecuted? I want to say yes, but I don't know.
So what happened to Deborah Mello on June 20th, 2000? We know that she was last seen at her dermatologist appointment that day, and that she left in the car with her husband. He claims that they got into an argument and that Deborah got out of the car. No one ever came forward claiming to have seen her after this time. If she was walking along a busy road, how come no one saw her? Why was her purse left in the car? Did she walk away to start a new life, leaving behind her children and her money? Does her husband Louis know more about what happened that day than he shared? Where was he for hours on the day she disappeared? Was he out looking for her, or perhaps doing something else? At the time of her disappearance, Deborah Marie Mello was 30 years old. She had brown hair and blue eyes. Deborah was described as about 5 foot 3 inches tall and weighing approximately 115 pounds. She has a tattoo of a rose and the name Louis on her shoulder. If you have any information about the disappearance of Deborah Mello, please call the Massachusetts State Police at 781-830-4800.
Well, the police in general, they feel that he definitely has something to do with it, but there's no evidence because he had way too much time to get rid of all the evidence. Way too much time. And this is coming from somebody, like I said, we went out dancing, leaving the house at, 9 o'clock at night. And by 1 o'clock in the morning, he's driving around looking for her. So, you're going to tell me you're going to go to bed with your wife not home, get up and she's still not home, and you're going to get yourself ready and go to work and work all day and she's still not home, and then you're going to go home and she's still not home, and you're not going to go looking for her? It wasn't until his daughter asked where she was. How come mom didn't come home last night? Where's mom? Keep in mind, they worked at the same Dunkin' Donuts. When the people at Dunkin' Donuts were asking, where's Deb? She never didn't go to work. She never called into work. I mean, I think that if he was questioned more, let him go home, bring him in, question him again. I think they're going to find that there's holes in his story. There has to be. Someone who lies, there's got to be holes in that story somewhere.
I've talked with many of people in law enforcement. He's the type of person that he has to know where she is, because otherwise, because he can sleep at night, he's composed himself very well, he's held himself together, he's living life like nothing's wrong. Is it because he is 100% certain that he can see where she is, he knows where she is, no one's disturbed it, no one's touched it? Or is it on his property? Did he move something? Is she right there in his yard under the ground? And he knows, as long as I own this house, no one's ever going to touch it.
You know, if Louis did it and they have evidence, and yes, I hope to God he ends up getting prosecuted. If they find the evidence and he did it, then he deserves to be in jail 100%.
That brings us to the end of episode 184. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. You can follow the show on Facebook, where we have a page and a private discussion group. My Twitter handle is thevanishedpod, and you can also find me on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Indiana. Thanks for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.